Hi, this is Rachel McElroy.
Hi, this is Griffin McElroy.
And this is Wonderful.
You've joined us at Wonderful, a podcast where we talk about things that are good, that we like, that we are into.
Mm-hmm.
This one's coming at you a little bit late. Blame Ganondorf. I blame Ganondorf for his evil, his treacherous magical acts.
Griffin is an official Zelda correspondent. He is out on the Zelda fields reporting every swing of the sword.
Yeah. And Rachel's bada ba 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 loving it. Just every 3 minutes I lean over. I'm like, I made a bird out of a fan and some wood. And she's like, I don't know what that means.
I'm very happy for you.
I'm glad to you have been very supportive.
Yes. Here's a tip. If you have lost your lover to Zelda, every once in a while, I just turn to Griffin and I say, hey, be with me.
Yeah.
And he will always do it.
That's true.
And that is all I need.
And sometimes I'll look at you while I'm playing Zelda. I'll be like, be with me in Hyrule. And you'll be like, it's not a two-player video game.
Yet.
But Rachel's working on...
I got some stuff happening.
Rachel's got some stuff in the hopper, some tools. She's been learning C++.
I got some cardboard.
Got some cardboard.
And some brads.
Mm-hmm. Been making a lot of sort of dioramas, life size.
Yeah.
We're all very excited to see how those turn out. Do you have any small wonders?
Oh, do I?
Do you?
Oh, I don't know. Can I... I've been doing a lot of research on high fiber foods for our youngest son.
This can't possibly be it. There's no way that this is a thing that brings you joy.
I got a papaya today. And I don't know anything about it. I don't know what to do with it.
Kind of scared of it, I'll be honest.
Yeah, it's very big.
It's huge.
But the woman that takes care of our son during the day so that we can work does know about papayas.
Yes.
And she said, I will help guide you on this journey.
And I do appreciate that.
And I handed her this giant thing and she said, it is not ready yet. And I said, thank you.
I'm so glad to hear that. Does it shrink as it ripens? This fucking thing is the size of my head. It's the size of a small watermelon.
I'm not 100% sure I've intentionally eaten papaya before.
Are you sure you bought a papaya and you buy some sort of like angry squash?
It looks like I think they're supposed to look. I mean, we'll see when we open it up.
Yeah.
I know what a squash looks like on the inside.
Gun to my head, I couldn't tell you what a papaya tastes like.
I know, here's the thing.
I have eaten it.
Yeah, it seems like the kind of thing when we've like been to a resort, they were like, oh, hey, here's some papaya on your plate. And we've probably eaten it and gone like, thank you. That was good.
I definitely got some at Tiki Tatsuya.
We had
like a papaya salad thing they had. Yeah. I've had it before. I just can't recall what it is. I get it mixed up with mango in my flavor palace, which is like my mind palace where I store all the flavors of food I've eaten away in. You know, I have that, right? That's my small wonders, my flavor palace. You say any food I've ever eaten.
Here's the problem, though, right? I personally like a bell pepper. In your flavor palace, you know that you don't.
No, yeah, but it's still in there. It's just like in the basement. Like,
yeah, but here's the thing. Maybe you should go down to the basement. And
no.
No.
No, there's some flavors down there that I mustn't. It's like the Evil Dead down there. I have it chained. It's a hatch under a rug, chained shut. I keep bell peppers down there. I keep Malort down there. I save only the foulest stuff that I put in there.
You know, it would be a fun thing for us to do because our oldest son is very vegetable averse.
Mm.
And there's definitely some crossover. I mean, there are vegetables that he assumes he doesn't like, and I can't really argue with him.
Yeah.
I think it would be fun for all of us as a family to get together and just try and stumble through.
A vegetable tray. You're saying it would be a fun afternoon if the four of us got a vegetable tray and sat down and said, no one is leaving this fucking room until this tray of vegetables is empty.
Henry has a real gift for describing things very precisely. I think it would be fun for all of us to be like, now what horrible thing does this taste like to you?
Yeah. I think that would establish some pretty healthy food relationships.
We watched an episode of Queer Eye, which we have been enjoying this new batch of episodes. And there was a woman who was very uncomfortable with
all-time green
vegetables. And I would say Anthony was very patient with her. But Griffin and I were watching it and we're like, this is pretty representative of the majority of people, I would say.
Yeah, I think so. She kept eating things and saying, this tastes so green. And it's like, yeah, actually, yeah, that's a very good, accurate way of describing when food doesn't taste good sometimes. And I do agree with you. Do you go first this week?
I do go first this week.
Go, let's do it. Let's rock.
I've got a trip planned for us, and that is a trip to the Poetry Corner.
I would love to go to the Poetry Corner this afternoon with you.
Mm-hmm.
Take my hand. I'll take your hand, rather.
Yeah, I would like to lead because I feel like I know how to get there.
Yeah, I would have a 1 in 4 shot of taking us to the corner of the room where the poetry is stored.
Mm-hmm.
But you would know the way, so please.
The poet.
Cool.
The poet. I almost said poem, and then I pivoted.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
I couldn't tell.
The poet is Ted Kooser.
Awesome name.
It's a very fun name.
Yeah. That's perfect, actually. The name is perfect. I've just decided.
It's K-O-O-S-E-R, which is arguably the best way to spell it, too.
Yeah, sure. Ted.
Ted.
Ted's such a strong name.
Okay. I don't actually, to my knowledge, it is not that it is short for Theodore. Or no, it is. Never mind.
What a huge called shot you just made. You're like, oh man, my boy Ted Kooser, though. He keeps it 100. That's just his name, guys. I think.
I guess I thought there would be like an equal amount. If his name was Theodore, I would see a lot of Theodore and or Ted. And I saw exclusively Ted. But now I am on the Wikipedia page and I can tell you confidently that it is in fact Theodore.
Theodore Kooser is tired. Ted Kooser is wired for sure.
Yeah.
He's made some good choices with his name.
This is a poet, who has been in the game for a long, long time. I don't know that I've read as much of his poems as I've just like seen his name around, you know,
probably
as you do.
Probably because it's a memorable, you don't forget that's when you see this one pop up on a website.
That's very true. He started, publishing books of poetry, in the late 60s, early 70s. And he is still around today. He is a professor emeritus at the University of Nebraska. A lot of times I think about, like, you used to have to write this, and I believe Rachel, our editor, does now, which is, like, how you classify
how
the
you
thing.
How you summarize the subject, yeah.
So I'm going to say he is my favorite Great Plains poet.
How do you pick, though? That's what a tough choice.
He is very Nebraska. I don't know a lot of... Have you met anyone from Nebraska?
No, I saw the movie. Wasn't there a movie called Nebraska that came out? And it was like the guy had a lottery ticket.
Oh, does that have Will Forte?
Will Forte was in it.
Yeah. Did we watch that?
I think we did.
I feel like I've met one person from Nebraska. I was going to ask you, this is a fun little pop quiz, not at all designed to make you feel inadequate, but could you tell me where Nebraska is?
Where Nebraska is.
Yes.
I feel like it's always more south than I expect.
Okay.
It's definitely on the left, middle left.
Uh-huh.
I want to say it's close to Kansas.
Yes.
And Iowa. No.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So I kind of crushed it, actually.
Yeah. No, you did really good.
Split the uprights
there. It is above Kansas, to the left of Iowa. It actually shares a very small border with Missouri. Above it is South Dakota, Wyoming to the left, Southwest Colorado.
I have met somebody from Nebraska. I've met somebody from every state with the MTV 2008 Choose
or
Lose campaign. Jane was her name.
Wow.
And she's like deep in the political scene. I still follow her on Facebook.
That's wild.
Yeah.
She's still in Nebraska?
She's still in Nebraska. She's still repping.
So that is the thing about Ted, is he has spent the majority of his kind of life in Nebraska. Before that, he graduated from Iowa State University. And then
huge basketball rivals with the Nebraska State University, which is a college, I bet.
This is what makes Ted so relatable. You know, you think of your poets, you know, and they're like
ivory towers.
They're like fancy with their fancy cigarettes.
Escargot and their fancy cigarettes. And their
expensive whiskeys.
Yeah.
He enrolled in a graduate writing program at the University of Nebraska and then flunked out a year later.
Hell yeah.
And took a entry-level job with an insurance company in Nebraska. And he stayed there for 35 years.
Jesus Christ.
Not that specific insurance company. He worked for two different insurance companies in that time period. But he ended up becoming vice president. And what he would do is he would write in the morning. He would wake up at 5:30 in the morning, and from 5:30 to 7, he would write. And apparently in the, like, 35 years that he worked there, he published 7 books of poetry.
Wow. I think the description of this segment could also say Rachel's favorite insurance agent.
You say that? Wallace Stevens was also in insurance.
There were actually a lot of people who were in insurance. I should watch my mouth.
This may surprise you, but it is difficult to make a living as a poet. So it is not uncommon. I mean, I would say in the world of the MFA, maybe you'll see some more poets that just do poetry for their lives. But back in the day, insurance.
How do you? Yeah. Insurance pays the bills.
Well, and insurance of all the industries is perhaps the most rich, you know, with metaphor and, beauty.
And beauty. Kindness. Generosity of the human spirit.
So I didn't just say, like, he is so Nebraska because he went to graduate school there and
I have to imagine
in his insurance company there.
He writes about Nebraska. Otherwise, what you said could come off as, like, the weirdest, most specific insult.
He is considered a Great Plains poet. A lot of people will reference his sense of, like, the landscape in the American Midwest and just kind of speaking to that very, like, regional part of the country. So I wanted to give you an example. This poem is called The Early Bird. It was published in Poetry Magazine 2003. The Early Bird. Still dark and raining hard on a cold May morning, and yet the early bird is out there chirping, chirping its sweet, sour, wooden, pulley notes, pleased, it would seem, to be given work, hauling the heavy bucket of dawn up from the darkness, note over note, and letting us drink.
That's good.
That's
a short. Yeah, that one was a short one. Got in, got out. Did what it needed to do. I like that.
He does a lot of those short ones. The thing I like, there's a real opportunity when you grow up in that area of the country to kind of, and this is probably something that'll speak to you too, like to not have that kind of pride in what some people would consider, like, the simplicity of that experience.
Right.
You know, like, it's not a particularly urban area. It's not known for, like, mountains or, you know, rivers or anything like particular. I mean, Nebraska, like, as I mentioned, I have not met a lot of people in Nebraska. There's a real opportunity for him to move on from that. But he loves and celebrates that place and still lives there today. And it's very evident in his work. And I think it's really inspiring to people who are pursuing poetry to, like, recognize, like, you're okay right where you are.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to say about exactly where you're located.
We have tried to engender that for West Virginia as much as is possible.
Mm-hmm. I will say West Virginia is incredibly beautiful.
Sure. I'm sure Nebraska, you're talking a lot of yay about Nebraska in this segment. I can see it on your face where every time you say something, you're like, oh, was that mean to Nebraska?
No, I'm not. I mean, I'm from Missouri. You know, I don't have a lot to stand on. Like, I'm from another state that people probably don't know a lot about.
Yeah.
I wanted to read one more poem since that one was so short. And the poem, appropriately, is called So This Is Nebraska.
Cool.
The gravel road rides with a slow gallop over the fields, the telephone line streaming behind, its billow of dust full of the sparks of red-winged blackbirds. On either side, those dear old ladies, the loosening barns, their little windows dulled by cataracts of hay and cobwebs, hide broken tractors under their skirts. So this is Nebraska, a Sunday afternoon, July, driving along with your hand out squeezing the air, a meadowlark waiting on every post. Behind a shelter belt of cedars, top deep in hollyhocks, pollen, and bees, a pickup kicks its fenders off and settles back to read the clouds. You feel like that. You feel like letting your tires go flat, like letting the mice build a nest in your muffler, like being no more than a truck in the weeds. Clucking with chickens or sticky with honey or holding a skinny old man in your lap while he watches the road, waiting for someone to wave to. You feel like waving. You feel like stopping the car and dancing around on the road. You wave instead and leave your hand out gliding lark light over the wheat, over the houses.
That's great.
Isn't that great?
That was really good.
It speaks to like a very relatable experience, like for anybody that has driven like through like that region of the country, you know, of just like this kind of like endless, but like still picturesque like experience of being in that like plains Midwestern region.
I took a writing class in college that was like Appalachian sort of writing, and we were given prompts to try and create things like what you've just read, which baked within me a deep appreciation for people who can actually do the shit, and have it not be complete garbage. That was really good.
So I just two more things about Ted Kooser. One, he has written a book that I have not read, but I'm excited about, called The Poetry Home Repair Manual.
I love that.
Came out in 2007. And it's all just kind of tools and insights and instructions on, you know, how to hone your craft if you are interested in poetry. And the other thing I will say, and it just was sunset in 2022, but he edited for 15 years a weekly newspaper column called American Life in Poetry, which they made available to newspapers around the country to publish for free.
Oh, that's cool.
So it was just kind of what they would do is he or his team would pick a poem and he'd write like a little intro. And then the idea was that any newspaper that wanted it could publish it.
That's really neat. I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, it was a partnership with Poetry Foundation. He was a poet laureate in 2004, and it kind of came out of that. Because as you know, poet laureates are given the keys to the country.
Oh, baby, yeah, they're the ones pulling the strings.
How do you want to spread poetry? And then they say, I want to own the newspapers. And they say, yeah. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir, Mr. Poet Laureate. That's a hard word to say. Can I steal you away?
Yes.
We all got needs. And to satisfy those needs, we subscribe to different services to fulfill those needs. Some of them are pretty dang good at it, if I do say so myself. But then you put away your childish things. You say, I don't have a need for a string cheese subscription service.
This huge box of string cheese every month and immediately throwing it away.
Yeah.
Maybe I should not receive this huge box of string cheese every month.
But you forget, don't you? So easily.
I know.
Your many subscriptions you've scattered, like Johnny Appleseed to his apple seeds. Well, Rocket Money is here to help. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps you lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. I've used Rocket Money before, and it found, not a joke, maybe 6 things that I had completely forgotten about. Like, maybe about $50 a month worth of shit that I just completely did not know, nor did I interface with the things that I was subscribing to.
Yeah, it's like that. We got that one app that promised to show us hockey and then almost entirely stopped showing us hockey.
Yep. And Rocket Money was like, you're not watching the hockey anymore. The Blues lost and not in the playoffs. Anyway. Rocket Money is fantastic, and we recommend using it if you think you might have some of those phantom subs. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wonderful. That's rocketmoney.com/wonderful. One last time, rocketmoney.com/wonderful. Folks, I'm recording this ad by myself. because Rachel, she did something totally wild. She hopped on her electric e-bike and she was like, I am out of here. And then she zoomed off. She hit a ramp and flew up in the sky like an E.T. movie and just went so fast that I was like, dang, where'd my wife even go? And she yelled from over the horizon on a bike adventure. And so I have to celebrate that. I have to cheer for her on that. This bike that Rachel got from Electric E-Bike, it is, one, very sleek and stylish. It looks fast because it is. The battery lasts forever. It shows up at your door, ships for free. It's got a quick toolless assembly, and you can even fold it up for easy travel and storage. It is the perfect time of year to have a sweet little bike for yourself to go on your own bike adventures away from your husband. Anyway, go full throttle into spring with Electric E-Bikes, the number one selling e-bikes in the nation. Get your adventure started at electricebikes.com, and please mention that Wonderful sent you in the post-checkout survey. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Trans representation in media is at an all-time high, with trans entertainers gracing the screens large and small.
But trans voices, especially Black trans voices, are rarely centered in our own stories.
That's why we bring you a new limited series called We See Each Other, the podcast, co-hosted by me, journalist and better half of the Max Fun podcast, Fanti, Travel Anderson,
and me, award-winning journalist and media personality, Char Jocel.
All of it is based on my book, We See Each Other, a Black trans journey through TV and film.
Now listen, folks, we're having a very different kind of conversation. It's giving kitchen table talk.
Mm-hmm. We get into the discourse, honey. Tune into We See Each Other, the podcast at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get Slayworthy audio.
The Legend of Zelda, Tears of the Kingdom.
Diablo 4.
Final Fantasy 16.
Street Fighter 6.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Starfield.
Spider-Man 2.
Master Detective Archives Rain Code for Nintendo Switch? No, is that just me?
It's a huge time for video games.
You need somebody to tell you what's good, what's not so good, and what's amazing.
I'm Jason Schreier.
I'm Maddie Myers.
And I'm Kirk Hamilton. We're the hosts of Triple Click, a video game podcast for anyone who likes games.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Is your wonderful thing this week, Nebraska?
It is, unfortunately, yeah. And that is it's uncomfortable because you've just talked so much shit about the big, beautiful state of Nebraska. I don't know anything about Nebraska either.
I don't either.
I know more about Nebraska now after hearing that poem than I did before. No, I'm going to talk about Deer Hoof, which you probably do. They probably do have deer in Nebraska. And okay. They probably do have hooves.
It's a good segue.
Yeah, that's it felt very natural. Deer Hoof, though, is an American indie rock band that has been around since 1994. Which was almost 30 years ago. They're still making music, which is a pretty fucking good run. Like, Sum 41 just hung it up. And I don't think they started in 1994. You know what I mean? That was the gold standard to me before that. I want to focus on my favorite album of theirs, which was 2005's The Runner's Four. Which I believe we talked a bit before we started recording, came out, I think was the next album after where you kind of had been introduced.
Yeah, so I knew Milkman came out in 2004. I remember being super excited about it. I may or may not actually have that CD somewhere in this house, but I was super into them, and then they totally disappeared from my radar.
They were very prolific in the mid aughts, but they are still putting out jams. I think they have an album that's coming out this year. So to kind of paint a picture, up until college, my musical tastes were very much informed by my older brothers, but it really was just like three bands. It was like They Might Be Giants. It was like Benfold's Five. Maybe some Dave Matthews Band mixed in there occasionally, but it wasn't like, those are great, you know, great bands and foundational music for me for sure. But that was it. And yeah. I hadn't really experienced like cool music or music that I thought was like cool until I was in college, and my cool college friends made me some mix CDs, and one of them was The Runners 4. And instantly, the first time I listened to it, I was convinced that I had like stumbled upon this like artifact of just cool, weird, alien music that I've never heard before. So if you've never heard Deer Hoof, here's a track off The Runners 4, probably my favorite track on the album, called You're Our Two. Deerhoof formed in 1994, like I said. It was an experimental, improvisational noise punk band, which doesn't sound good to me. As far as I can tell, that means that they did like fucked up stuff to their guitars on stage in a live environment.
Yeah.
They kind of just did that for a very long time. They didn't really, their star didn't rise until almost a decade after they formed. They released an album in 2003 called Apple O, which was really where they found their niche, playing just this like blown out, super funky, kind of poppy indie rock with these bizarre, gentle, kind of lilting vocals from their singer, Satomi Matsuzaki. And that album was huge. It was very anti-war. It had this huge anti-war message, which in 2003 was very noteworthy at the time. So Rolling Stone and Pitchfork elevated it and called it, you know, the one of the best albums of the year, one of the best albums of the aughts. I would say throughout the 2000s, they just kind of continued to be heaped upon with praise as an indie darling. But in 2005, they recorded The Runners 4 in a San Francisco studio. And just for shits and giggles, they took turns being vocalists on the album. There's 20 tracks on this thing. And they're not all great because some of them is not the best singer is on it.
Yeah.
They didn't do this again. This was the only album where they're like, wouldn't it be fun if we all sang, and then by the next one, they're like, let's actually change up the members of the band and let's just have like one or two singers from now on. But the songs on this album that hit so very, very, very hard, which I appreciate. It is a strange fit, I think, when you hear these specifically the vocals from Satomi Matsuzaki, to think like, this is an album that gets me pumped up out of my fucking mind just because of how hard that they go with the guitars and the bass and the blown out drums and stuff.
Yeah, it's funny because the word that keeps coming to mind for me is interesting, and that always sounds like the thing
dismissive.
It sounds like the thing you say when you don't really like something, but that's not actually true. It's like the kind of song that you could listen to over and over again, and you would always pull something out of it that was new. You know, it's very complex, I guess maybe is a better word.
Yeah, and I mean experimental in the truest form. Like I don't know that I had ever heard a studio album before I listened to The Runners 4 that was like kind of sloppy, kind of like the tempo just kind of bounces, just kind of wanders back and forth between several different points, and the instruments are rarely like super in sync, and there's like no effects applied to the vocals, like hardly at all throughout the whole thing. And I think it took me a while to really get into their music, because a lot of it is like, I think, more experimental than I usually have patience for. But there's something just undeniably cool about somebody who can, a band that can have that kind of sloppy experimental vibe.
Yeah.
And make it work.
Yeah. No, I had a really close friend in college who was very into Sonic Youth.
Yeah. Same exact.
Yeah. Thing. And it was the kind of band that I never probably would have chose for myself. But like having her be into it was like really helpful for me to be like, oh, yeah, you know what? I get it. I like this song. Maybe I don't like that song, but this one's really cool and not anything I would have heard otherwise.
It's funny you mentioned Sonic Youth because I lump them very much into this same category of bands I discovered. I started college in 2005, and it was a very transformative time, you know, for anyone. But, you know, we were going through some stuff that was a big, big shakeup. And also, at the same time, I was having just this fucking Cambrian explosion of musical influence where just my whole world opened up, and it was a really fun time for this kind of music too, because like you had I harbor the same kind of fondness for like Wolf Parade and Islands and Broken Social Scene and Stars and a lot of these bands that were like releasing albums in the mid-aughts that were just really good indie rock music for the most part and were also like playing every music festival. And so when I went to the Pitchfork Music Festival and saw like what's the band that did Crown on the Ground I can remember all their song names but can't remember the name of them. Anyway, them too, right? Like all of these bands that were in a really important sort of time in my life that were kind of, are you Googling who did Crown?
Yes, because it's going to make me crazy if I don't. But I can see it. Like I can see the album cover.
I can see the artist.
Sleigh Bells.
God, thank you. That was brutal. It was a wild time in my life, and it was a wild time for this genre of music, and they really aligned in a spectacular fashion. And so whenever I listen to Deerhoof's music, like it takes me right back.
Can I ask, I just remembered you worked at the college radio station.
I did, yeah.
I was always...
Worked is a very generous verb.
I never really understood. It seemed like a lot of people that were in charge of college radio somehow knew these bands that I had never come across or heard of. And this was in a time period where people were like, didn't carry the internet around in their pocket.
Sure.
You know? And it took like real effort to learn of these like new cool bands. Were you given some kind of edge? Were they like, hey, Griffin, next week, you should know that there's this band and they're super cool?
Okay, a few answers to this question. Okay. One, I would say that people who volunteer their time to work at college radio stations are usually a bit more plugged into, you know, the music industry scene of whatever genre that their show represents a bit more than the average bear. But also like college radio stations, and again, probably doesn't work like this anymore. It would be fucking wild, in fact, if it did. But we would get sent like albums, we would get sent CDs by
That would make sense.
You know, promoters or by the label itself.
Yeah.
WMUL, was that what it was? Oh my God, I can't believe I just forgot the name of the college radio station I used to work at. There would just be like filing cabinets filled with CDs, and each one would have like a label on it that was like, this is a indie pop thing that, I don't know who that was for, because I never ever, I just burned my own CDs from home, which we weren't really supposed to do.
Because
it had to be cleared for bad words, which we may have let a couple of them say, but our show was also at like 1 a.m, so nobody really cared. Anyway, I want to lead it off, or I guess leave with one last track from The Runners Four, and it has a guitar riff that has been stuck in my mind going on 18 years now. It's so fucking funky. It's called Spirit Ditties of No Tone.
Inspirations and sensations.
That's it for the show this week. Very artsy. Very artsy.
Very artsy. Hey, before you start thanking people and things, can you share listener submission?
I would love to share a listener submission. I got a couple of them right here. And the first one of the listener submissions that I have starred in the inbox and will begin reading right now is from Emmett, who says, my small wonder this week is taking a shower when you're actually dirty. Whether it's from adventuring, gardening, painting, or DIY, there's something so satisfying about taking a shower when there's something visible to wash off.
Wow.
Love that.
I don't know if I can remember the last time.
That you got like mud?
Yeah. I spent a lot of my life now avoiding that. There will be a lot of opportunities with our children to get dirty, and I will look at Griffin and be like, will you? Will you? And then sometimes—
Yeah, I don't mind. I used to give a shit. I don't. I think, I don't know what changed. Like, the other day I was playing with Gus, and we were just laying down in the grass, and I was like, this is not something that I would, of course, we, you know, used to live in the woods. And so laying down in the grass, which give us any number of.
Wasn't really grass to speak of. No, I mean, I'm talking about like dirt, like when you
dirty
see
dirt
on the floor of the shower.
Yeah.
I can't. It's been a long time.
Yeah. My wonderful thing this week, says Kaylee. My wonderful thing this week is airport architecture. Any airport you go to, there will always be something absolutely wild, from a wall covered in paper cranes to a ceiling of neon lights or maybe a ginormous devil horse statue. I think it's pretty sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I am really into, since we moved to DC, I really like the Reagan Airport.
Reagan Airport kicks ass. It's got some pretty wild, they've made some pretty wild choices with that one.
Yeah, like you go through security and then you like walk into this like huge, like rounded, like old timey looking airplane hangar situation, and it is.
And the floor is covered with panels of light across like a bridge at some point. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
Does DCA, is that also the one that has the underground, like long ass escalator with a running billboard, like video advertisement that goes across the
walls? I think that might be Dulles.
That might be Dulles, actually. Yeah. Cause that's where I flew out of last. It's fucking not great. Cause it's a long, long, long underground tunnel that like goes under the whole like runway. And while you're there, there's one car insurance company that's like blaring music. And then there's just like a video that is playing on this long screen that runs the length of the thing. It's probably not a great ad if I can't remember the name of the company or the thing.
Yeah,
even though
yeah.
I was subject to it for like 3.5 minutes. Anyway, that's it for real. Thank you to Bowen and Augustus for the use of our theme song, Money Won't Pay. You can find a link to that in the episode description. Thank you to Maximum Fun for having us on the network. Go to MaximumFun.org. Check out all the shows there. We are going to be in Columbus and Milwaukee doing Mabim Bam and Taz this weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I think Columbus Friday, Saturday, and Milwaukee on Sunday.
There will also be Sawbones and Schmanners.
Sawbones and Schmanners opening, yes. Yeah. So we're going to have a good ass time, and you should come and see us because I bet you'll have a good time too. Go to macroy.family. You can find links to all that stuff. And I think that's it.
Yeah, I saw somebody talking about how they liked listening to this podcast when they clean.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe we could close out the show with some kind of like inspirational, like cleaning. Yeah. So I thought maybe you could start.
Okay.
With all of, you know, you're kind of a neat freak.
Yeah, yeah, sure, sure. Don't give up. Scrub it down. Don't give up, scrub it down is good. That there's
I
a
do.
Parallel.
Don't give up. Yes. Yeah,
don't
like
give
that.
Up, scrub uh-huh. it down.
I was gonna say, keep
you introduced this bit.
Well, you really crushed it in a way that I wasn't anticipating. I was just gonna say
see.
I was gonna say stuff like one more time dampen.
One more time dampen is better than mine.
You think so?
In every measurement is better. One more time dampen.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.